Iowa, like the rest of the country, is reeling after the shooting in Orlando. This hour, Iowa perspectives on that tragedy. It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. First today, I talk with an Iowan who wrote a column after the Orlando shooting titled, "I'm Gay and Married to a Muslim, and Today I'm Not Okay." Then we hear reaction from the owner of a well-known gay bar in Des Moines, also from the organizer of Iowa City Pride events going on this week. And then I talk with Christian conservative leader Bob Vanderplaats. He'll give us his thoughts on Donald Trump. That's ahead of a meeting he'll have with Donald Trump next week. It's your Friday News Buzz. Stay tuned. First, this news from NPR. It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, the families of some of the 49 people killed in the massacre at an Orlando gay nightclub will lay their loved ones to rest. Funerals are expected to be held over the next couple of weeks. Iowa, like the rest of the country, is reeling after this shooting. And in this first half hour of River to River, we want to have several perspectives on the tragedy, including a talk with the organizer of Iowa City Pride events about extra security measures they're taking. And also I'll talk with the owner of one of Iowa's best-known gay bars in Des Moines. We'll talk about the role of bars and clubs as safe spaces for the LGBT community. But first, I want to talk with Brian Bruning. He's an Iowa native who is married to a Muslim man from Algeria. They live in Elkader, Iowa. Earlier this week, Brian's reaction to the Orlando shooting was published by the Des Moines Register with the title, "I'm Gay and Married to a Muslim, and Today I Am Not Okay." Brian Bruning joins us now. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Ben.
What if you can just start off by just reading a bit of the article that appeared in the Register?
Sure thing. "I am gay. I am married to a Muslim man from Algeria. I own and operate an Algerian-American restaurant in a small corner of Iowa. My restaurant is in a tiny town named after a 19th-century Algerian general who later became a Sufi Muslim religious leader. For many who come to my restaurant, it is the first contact they have with North African food or this small glimpse of Muslim culture. And today, I am not okay. Though 1,500 miles away, the massacre of LGBT people in Orlando has shaken me, and it's not okay. It's not okay that my community was singled out and attacked. It's not okay that this kind of terror could happen during LGBT Pride Month. It's not okay that violence against queer people is frequent and often unremarked upon by the media. It's not okay that this kind of terror could happen during Ramadan, a month of fasting, introspection, and peace. It's not okay that there are people who hate my husband because he is a Muslim and from Algeria. It's not okay that there are people who hate me and my husband because we are two men. It's not okay that these previous two groups are not mutually exclusive. It's not okay that I feel like the target on my back just got bigger today."
Brian Bruning, there are a lot of other powerful statements you have in the piece that appeared in the Des Moines Register. Tell us about your reaction when you found out about the massacre in Orlando. What was that morning like?
Well, when I woke up that morning, typically when I wake up, my morning ritual is to read the news headlines. I'm very much a news junkie. And it was just horror and, you know, woke up in tears. Like, how can you not be completely saddened by this thing? Mm-hmm. And just it just brought into clear perspective to me how fragile the gains that the gay community has made in this country really are. How gay people are still a target.
Though he was a terrorist, no doubt, but it's really a question of what kind of terrorist. He swore allegiance to the Islamic State, but also we hear from reports of people who knew him seemed to be a deeply disturbed, homophobic man. He drank heavily. He took drugs. He dated men and frequented the club where the massacre took place. So I guess the question is, isn't it, Brian, what kind of hate crime is this?
Well, I guess in the end, it doesn't have to be just one. It can be many things, and that's what it felt like to me. Part of the thing that it feels so visceral about this whole thing is the fact that gay people are an easy target. So that, yes, this violence happened, and, you know, 49 people lost their lives. But, you know, in the last, like, last three years, you know, over 60 people, trans people, have been murdered. So it's not like this violence against the LGBT community is unheard of. And the fact that it's through the perspective of an Islamic fighter or a member of ISIS, I understand that it is important to deal with that, but it doesn't negate the fact that it was targeted against this specific community.
Mm-hmm. The gay community, the LGBT community.
Yes.
One of your "it's not okay" statements that you read is, "It's not okay that I feel like the target on my back just got bigger today." Explain that. Many of our listeners will not know what you mean by that.
So, you know, as I said before, I'm married to a Muslim man, and it is the intersection of Islam and LGBT issues is a very fraught one. In much of the Muslim world, it is very much condemned. It is punishable by death in many countries, including our ally Saudi Arabia. So the fact that I'm married to Frederick it's a complicated relationship because I don't know how to say it any clearer than the fact that it's a relationship that probably shouldn't exist in nature. If you just looked at the two communities as completely opposite sides of some spectrum that everybody seems to want to express. However, in my experience, I know several like people who come to America as immigrants, as refugees, because of this. In Frederick's native Algeria, it would have been impossible for him to have been out. Mm-hmm. He would have no rights as an LGBT person. But in America, he has these opportunities here. And the target that I'm talking about is that there are people, and I'm not saying that there's, you know, threats or anything. I'm not making these charges. But there are people who are uncomfortable with him being here because he's Muslim, and there are people who are uncomfortable with him being here because he's gay.
Okay, I understand that.
And that's a really weird position to be in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's my husband, and I'm with him in this same situation.
Right, and you've been together now for 15 years, living in El Cader, I think, most of that time. I'm wondering, when you talk about the feeling here, even though you're allowed to live in the United States, and you pointed out that wouldn't be possible under the circumstances you have now in your husband's native Algeria, what are the ways in which life here, can you give us an example of how you feel being married to a Muslim man is looked down upon here in Iowa in daily experience? Do you have an experience to share?
Well, I think it is more an offhanded sort of thing, whereas you know, this is actually one of the reasons why we moved to Iowa is because I think it is a really great place to live, and people in general are very kind and very willing to give people the benefit of the doubt. But it's the more subtle kind of reactions to things where I would say suspicion is the general thing. So when we first moved here, people couldn't understand why we came here. And then when we opened an Algerian restaurant, they couldn't understand why we would do that. So it's not overt. It is not, you know, people throwing rocks through our windows. But it's more of a general closing down of conversation sometimes, mm-hmm. of just general talk. But that doesn't say that, I mean, we still love Iowa. We love being here. And, you know, many people may not know, but Iowa has incredibly good LGBT protections. They have workplace protections for everyone. They're one of the few states that has gender identity as a part of their non-discrimination thing. So that said, the problem with a lot of this is that fear is not necessarily based on anything real. It's based on a sense of things. And what Orlando did was really, in my mind, highlight a lot of those subtle things. It doesn't make it any more real or the problem more severe, but it just really drew them to the surface in my head.
This piece in the Des Moines Register that you wrote, Brian, came out on Tuesday. What's been the reaction that you've received? I imagine a spectrum of reaction.
It has, but in general, it's been very, very positive. I've gotten calls at the restaurant from customers I haven't seen in more than once or twice, in a few years, saying it. And so in general, people, it's been a lot of thank yous, honestly. That's what, like, the overall thing is a thank you for saying something that needed to be said. I wrote that on Sunday. It took me an hour to put that down because it just kind of fell out of my head. But those were the feelings that I was feeling at the time. All these intersections there, tempered by this just immense sadness that something like this could happen in the United States. And not that it could happen, but it continues to happen over and over again, because I think that's some of what I'm trying to express there, is just this fatigue of how these tragedies keep happening over and over again. And the fact that it happened to my community this time made it so much more real to me, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it's one of a list, and that's the problem. It's the fact that it's a list of many tragedies that keep happening that makes it so sad and so angering.
Brian Bruni, I want to thank you for this conversation. We'll certainly post a link to that piece that you wrote for the Des Moines Register on our website and our Facebook page. Brian, thank you. Brian wrote an article that was published earlier this week by the Des Moines Register with the title, "I'm Gay and Married to a Muslim, and Today I Am Not Okay." Brian is a native Iowan married to a Muslim man who lives in Elkader, and they've been together for 15 years. Brian, thank you for sharing with us how you've been coping as an American and as a gay man married to another man here in the United States. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. This show primarily looking at various perspectives on Sunday's mass shooting in Orlando from here in Iowa. On this day, a day when the families of some of the 49 people killed in the massacre will lay their loved ones to rest. Joining me now in the Des Moines studio, Bob Eichelberry is with us, founder of Blazing Saddle. That's a gay bar in Des Moines. In fact, the longest running gay bar in Iowa. Bob, welcome to the program.
Welcome, hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
How have you and the others in the LGBT community in Des Moines coped with the news of the tragedy in Orlando?
Well, I was setting up for Pride Sunday when I heard about it, and that was the buzz all through Pride. We had a moment of silence and recognition of our fellows that died, and it was quite a shock to everybody that something like that would happen today.
Mm-hmm. Gay bars and clubs have come to be seen as safe places for LGBT community members. Has this attack changed that?
No. In fact, my community considers my bar their living room. Anything they need to know, anything they want to say can be said or done there. Mm-hmm. And they've always felt safe.
How, though, has this changed the way you may view potential threats? Have you changed any practices, become more aware or aware of potential threats there?
I've added more security cameras, and I've got plainclothes security people walking around that you wouldn't even know were there.
Mm-hmm. Your bar has been around how long? We mentioned it's the longest running gay bar in Iowa, huh?
Just shy of 34 years.
Mm-hmm. Was there a time when you started out that you felt less safe than you do today?
Oh, when I started, I had steel bars on my windows. Every bartender was armed with pepper spray. It was rough. Mm-hmm. And a lot of threats. And back then I was a lot younger and a scrappier. And mess with me or my folks and I'll wail on you.
I understand yesterday your bar, Blazing Saddle, was vandalized. What happened?
All right. My mayor, who I dearly love, Frank County, for the first time in history, raised the gay flag at City Hall. And I went down to thank him and be part of that celebration. Then I come down the next morning and rocks in another busted window.
So the flag was raised as a commemoration to those who lost their lives in Orlando.
Absolutely.
And you came back to your bar and there was a busted window?
No, that was the next morning.
The next morning, what has the investigation found?
Well, we reviewed our security tapes from my cameras, and we've got a video of the guy. Just turned that into the detectives today.
Mm-hmm. Any hints at the motivation behind it? Do you think it's connected with Orlando?
It just sounds very strange that it all happens around the same time, and this being Gay Pride Month, too.
Mm-hmm. Have you or your bar been the target of other threats or vandalism?
Oh, yeah, about a year ago. I usually get hate mail around Christmas, and it's usually poorly written, bad grammar and everything else, and we hang it up and laugh at it. Well, last year I received a letter containing alleged anthrax, and how all us faggots are going to burn in hell and blah, blah, blah. So I had the hazmat team come down. They cordoned off the block. Turned out it was foot powder. But then the guy shot his mouth off in Ames, and they got him.
Hmm. What are your hopes, Bob, for the future of the LGBT community and for everyone in our society after this massacre?
Okay, my humble opinion, I'm a part-time reverend, too, and I've married 26 straight and gay people. I love God, I love Christ, and I believe we should just keep preaching love. I don't care if you're black, white, straight, gay, Muslim, Hindu, or whatever. There's all one that takes care of us. And we ought to respect it. And God never preached hate.
Bob Eichelberry, thank you very much for joining us, coming into our studio, founder of Blazing Saddle, the longest-running gay bar in Iowa. We appreciate it, Bob.
Thank you.
Well, we're concentrating on reflections, reactions this half hour to the massacre at a gay nightclub in Orlando last weekend. This week has been, coincidentally, Iowa City Pride Week, a week of events that focus on acceptance and diversity while celebrating Iowa's LGBTQ community. Joined now by Jewel Amos in our Iowa City studio is the chair of Iowa City Pride. Thanks for joining us, Jewel.
I'm glad to be here.
It's running. It's currently going on. You have several days of Pride Week left. For those who don't know, what does Pride mean? What does Pride Week mean?
Pride Week for us, it's mostly a celebration of the positive accomplishments that have happened in the queer community, and it also is to bring visibility and awareness that we still have a distance to go to make things so we don't have to have a pride celebration anymore.
Mm-hmm. You woke up to the tragedy as we did, all of us did in Orlando on Sunday. How did that change the Pride Week, which took place? You were right on the eve of Pride Week, right?
Yeah. Emotionally, it's heightens everybody's emotions, and we are also worried about security. You know, so we've been focusing mostly on physical and emotional safety of the people in our community.
Mm-hmm. And how have you done that?
There's some organizations in town, the Crisis Center and like the Women's Resource and Action Center. They've been focusing on the emotional aspect for Pride. The Jason Zeman, one of the bar owners in Studio 13, and myself have been working with police and coming up with security plans for our larger events.
Mm-hmm. Did you have people in the community afraid to come out and celebrate this week?
Yeah, there were. They were afraid to bring their children out to the Pride Parade. And
to be clear, these are not just gays and lesbians who are coming out. These are allies of the LGBT
community,
right?
Yeah, exactly,
exactly.
And it would be, you know, kind of stupid to not have a little bit of a sense of fear, just because we are a higher risk community.
Mm-hmm. How did you answer those fears, or what do you say to someone who is really scared at this moment?
Well, yeah, for one, you just have to follow your heart. If you are that scared and don't feel it's right for you to come out, don't come out. But we are hoping that there are power in numbers, and we just tell people that we are preaching that we aren't going to fall into that hate category, and we're not going to allow this to affect our how we live our lives. You can't live your life in fear.
Mm-hmm. I understand there's always, during Pride Week, a group of protesters who show up. They showed up this week?
Not yet. Not yet. Usually they tend to be at the parade and walk around the festival because we are in the Ped Mall, so anybody can walk around. And because of free speech, we allow them to carry their signs and walk around. We just try not to engage them. And
you don't react to them at all? Do you engage at all?
Mostly what I do is I make sure that no one, engages them and just let them have their free speech. I invite them back every year because, we do have a little bit of fun with them and make fun of them a little bit. But they have the right to say what they want to say.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Jewel, can you give us your personal reaction to the Orlando shooting?
I came out 26 years ago, and I've had personal acts of violence against me because of being in the queer community.
For instance,
a friend of mine and I were leaving a bar, and we got attacked by a group of teenage boys. And luckily, I had a softball bat in my car and was able to get them away from us so we could get away.
And you knew this was directed against you?
It had to be a hate crime because they saw us come out of a gay bar and we didn't know them at all. So there was no other way for them to discriminate against us. It was mm-hmm. just because of that situation.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few seconds left, but what do you feel the LGBTQ community and its allies need to do going forward in the face of such tragedies also? Because we hope there will never be something like this again, but we fear there may be.
Right. And constantly try to keep yourself educated about the facts and keep yourself open-minded and also try not to preach hate.
Mm-hmm. What can allies of your community do?
They can also show up and change their wordings, and instead of saying things like, oh, that's so gay, that's actually part of the problem, is saying things like that. Mm-hmm. And just working towards bettering themselves and being more open-minded and less hateful.
It's a few days left of the Iowa City Pride Week. Still the parade to come?
Yep, we have parade and festival starting tomorrow at noon.
Okay, very good. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Jewel Amos, chair of Iowa City Pride, going on this week, of course, in Iowa City. Jewel, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River. When we come back, a conversation with the Christian conservative leader in Iowa, Bob Vanderplaats. He'll give us his thoughts on Orlando, but also, first and foremost, on Donald Trump, ahead of a meeting he'll have together with other faith leaders. He'll be meeting with the presumptive GOP presidential nominee next week. Christian conservative leader Bob Vanderplaats with us after a short break. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Following the Orlando shooting, presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump doubled down on his proposal to ban Muslims from entering the country. If you remember, this came days after his criticism of a federal judge that many, Republicans included, found racist. Criticism as well from, for instance, House Speaker Paul Ryan. We've been hearing in our news how many Republicans across the country are criticizing Trump for his various remarks. Bob Vanderplaats is among them. He is president and CEO of the Christian conservative group, The Family Leader, based in Iowa. We've spoken to him several times on this program before. Bob Vanderplaats, welcome back to our program.
Great to be with you, Ben.
Let me go to the NBC News article that was published last week. It suggested that a convention coup may be possible to oust and replace presumptive nominee Donald Trump. You and A.J. Spiker, he's a former Iowa GOP chairman, were both featured prominently in the piece. And if I could just quote from the article, you were quoted as saying, everything's got to be on the table. And you acknowledged, according to the article, to NBC News that this could mean an effort to unbind the delegates from having to vote for Trump on the convention floor. Do you still believe Trump could be prevented from becoming the nominee?
Well, I don't know about that, Ben. I think that's up to Mr. Trump himself. Just to be clear, and I was very clear to Vaughn Hilliard of NBC News as well, I'm not part of a coup. I'm not trying to look to overthrow Donald Trump. But now that he's the presumptive nominee, everybody's watching. And so the words he says definitely matter. There's a lot of factors to take in, and ultimately the delegates are in charge in Cleveland. And so I view this as more of an accountability mechanism for Donald Trump. I think it's an accountability mechanism that our party founders gave us. But it's a thing of, when I say everything needs to be on the table, everything needs to be on the table in regards to let's come out of here the strongest possible, whether that's with Donald Trump as our nominee or whoever it is as our vice presidential nominee or whatever else might occur in Cleveland. But I do believe Cleveland is going to be an interesting place this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an understatement. Interesting. Tell me, from your understanding of how the convention works and how a nominee is anointed, if I can use that word, how would this work if Donald Trump would not be selected? How might it work in your understanding?
You know, that's a great question and one that I haven't spent a lot of time in. Well, from my understanding is there's a rules committee that has 112 members on it, and they have to forward the rules, they have to recommend the rules for the convention to the entire delegate body. And if it gets 1,237 votes, it passes. If it doesn't, it doesn't pass. And so that's where people are saying, you know, the delegates ultimately are in charge. And the delegates are watching this presidential race very, very closely. They're watching their presumptive nominee very closely. There's conversations that are being had. I'll be part of a conversation next week, Tuesday, in New York with Mr. Trump, along with a bunch of other faith leaders, but having a very unvarnished conversation without the press to see, is this somebody that we can rally behind? Mm-hmm. I've been very clear, Ben, that I'm not in the hashtag Never Trump crowd. Matter of fact, I think if people look at my experience with Mr. Trump and I are friends. We have been for the last 5 or 6 years. But I'm also a friend that's willing to hold him accountable when he says things that, quite frankly, I don't think are appropriate for seeking the highest office.
Okay, so what are your biggest concerns about Trump's remarks about him becoming the nominee and possibly the president?
Well, I think the key things that I communicate with others about and even communicate with Mr. Trump about, A, is that we just want to make sure that we can trust him, trust his leadership in regards to what we believe are key issues for the country, whether that be on faith or family or freedom, domestic policy, international policy, those types of things. Two is, who is he going to surround himself with? And one of the first indicators of who he's going to surround himself with is going to be, who does he put forth to be his vice president? And that's going to be a consideration for everybody in Cleveland as well, because the delegates have to approve that vice presidential choice. And then we also are very concerned about, who would he appoint to be a Supreme Court justice? Now, the list he put out a few weeks ago, we applauded. We looked at the names, thought those looked good. But more than that, we want to know, what is his basis for appointing Supreme Court justices? So then, regardless of the name, we know he's got the right foundation in appointing Supreme Court justice. So it comes down to, in any leadership position, A, can we trust you? And then B is, who are you going to put around yourself, because personnel is policy.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen this fact, because PolitiFact, a nonpartisan group that looks at candidate statements, has found that about 75% of what Donald Trump says is untrue. And when you talk about trust, I wonder how you can trust a candidate who is evaluated as saying more that is untrue than is true.
Well, and that's probably one of the reasons why I think a lot of people are having this conversation. Why there will be a conversation on Tuesday in New York without press with Mr. Trump. And I think there's reasons why you see a Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, or a Majority Leader in Mitch McConnell, holding him to account as well, why you're seeing other party leaders, because they want to get to a place to where, I can trust him, and I can support him. And that's why they're working with Mr. Trump right now, because he is the presumptive nominee. According to the rules that were laid out to him and the other presidential candidates by the Republican Party, he achieved that threshold. And so if anybody is going to be successful in trying to deny him that nomination, they have to have very, very good reason, because the delegates going there are very good. They're very seasoned people that will make this decision in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. You said you're not in the Never Trump camp. After this meeting with Donald Trump that is planned for next week, depending on what he says, could you see yourself possibly endorsing Donald Trump?
You know, I'm not so sure about endorsing, because I really view endorsing as being something that I endorse everything pretty much about them. And I could see myself getting to a level of I'm going to support Donald Trump, say, over a Hillary Clinton. Because there's a lot of knowns that I know about Hillary Clinton that I, quite frankly, don't want to see being my next president. And so, therefore, if the choice is a Donald Trump or a Hillary Clinton, you know, I could see myself getting there that I will support a Donald Trump over a Hillary Clinton.
Even with all the flaws that you yourself point out in Donald Trump.
Right. I mean, yeah, he is not a flawless candidate. He's a very unusual candidate. And I think that's why, you know, both parties are really wrestling right now. I mean, the Democrat Party has a very known Hillary Clinton. But the country is not in the mood of we want politics as usual. That's why Bernie Sanders got such backing and support during this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in the Republican field, the two that were the main considerations, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, both of them represent not politics as usual. And so, Donald Trump is going to offer not politics as usual. What I know about Hillary Clinton and the way that she will lead, she's not going to get my vote.
When you meet with Donald Trump next week, what are the top points, your priority points, that you want to talk to Donald Trump about?
Well, it's not just me. I mean, there's a lot of faith leaders. But I think what the faith leaders are really going to want to communicate is a trust level. How we represent ourselves means a lot. The words that we choose means a lot. But more than that, about who are you going to surround yourself with? Because if Donald Trump surrounds himself with people like the people who ran against him, like Rick Perry or Bobby Jindal or Mike Huckabee or Rick Santorum, people like that, that would give a lot of people cause for pause. Ben Carson, who's very out front in the Trump campaign right now, there's a lot of people that like Ben Carson. So who are you going to surround yourself with? But then I think the big element that's on the ballot that's bigger than Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and that's the Supreme Court justices. And who are you going to appoint to the Supreme Court? And I think when we take a look at Hillary Clinton and the record there and the methodology there, we see that's just going to be more activist judges stepping outside their constitutional bounds to enact policy that the people of this country never would pass. And what we're looking at is, will we get constitutional justices, people that will adhere to the Constitution versus to a liberal agenda?
Bob Vanderplaats, before we say goodbye, I want to get your reaction to a couple of other things quickly here, since we're running out of time.
Sure.
We referenced the NBC article that suggested a convention coup. You explained that here a few minutes ago. You were referenced in that article. But state GOP chairman, the current one, Jeff Kaufman's reaction to that story, where you were quoted, was highly critical of you and A.J. Spiker, the former Iowa GOP chair. And to quote him, this is a story of two gentlemen, he's speaking of you, two gentlemen, neither of whom have ever won an election, getting their name in the press and doing so in a way that's harmful to the credibility of our state nationally. This is what Kaufman told the Des Moines Register, and he added, shame on them. What's your reaction?
Well, we did a reaction, and this is not about Jeff Kaufman and myself or the state party and myself. Matter of fact, I put out a piece after that article, and it was entitled Shame on Who? ? Meaning, I think we have a responsibility as citizens. And it's not about winning an election that makes you worthy to comment on anything. The power of the people is where the founders put the power. And so there should be voices of accountability, whether it's with prisoners of war or whether it's with people with disabilities or whether it's with a religious test or whether it's with a lot of other things. There needs to be voices of accountability. And so the people, and talk about not winning an election, the people of the state also put me as a delegate to the national convention. So these are things I think. And there's a lot of people out there. We're not the only voices, and I pointed that out. Paul Ryan, Speaker Newt Gingrich, Lamar Alexander, even State Senator David Johnson. There's a lot of voices out there saying we want to hold account. That's not to disparage Donald Trump. That's to make Donald Trump a better candidate and, if elected president, a better leader of this country.
Mm-hmm. And finally, before we go, Bob Vanderplaats, we've spoken with you before and also in a notable hour with you and Donna Redwing of One Iowa. And we know that you seek understanding and open communication with the LGBT community in Iowa, even if you don't agree with their political goals, their legislative goals. With that backdrop, I wanted to ask you about your reaction to the attack in Orlando on the gay nightclub that killed at least 49. Specifically, what are your thoughts on curbing the sort of hate that toward that community that seems to have led to the Orlando attack?
Well, first of all, I was sickened. It was a gut punch Sunday morning when I learned of it and heard of it. And I think what it is, it's not even so much of a hate for a community as it is it's a radical religion by obviously a very deranged individual who would do something like that. Matter of fact, in our team meeting, Ben, we talked about if you radicalize Christianity, I mean, if you take Christianity to its extreme, you love your neighbor as yourself. You're willing to take a bullet. You're willing to die for another person, lay your life down, but you would never take a life of another. Never. You're willing to debate issues. You're willing to, but you're willing to speak the truth in love. And so my reaction to this, and I reached right away out to Donna when I learned of it. I mean, it was a gut punch. And my thoughts, my prayers went out to the victims, to the families, to the friends, to people who identify in the LGBT community. My heart went out to them.
Okay, thank you very much for this conversation. Bob Vanderplaats, President and CEO of the Christian Conservative Group, The Family Leader, based in Iowa. Thank you very much, Bob.
All right, God bless you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This year marks the very first annual Two Rivers Festival. It's to be held in Conesville. Conesville in Iowa, a town with a population of just over 400. That's in southeastern Iowa. Joining us to tell us about this new festival, Blake Daly, a musician, also organizer of the Two Rivers Music Festival. Blake, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Tell us, what is the vision you have for this new festival?
It all kind of evolved here out of working with the owner of the Conesville Event Grounds there, which is just a little south of Conesville, about 3 miles north of Columbus Junction, Iowa, down there. And it kind of just came together as an opportunity to put these younger folk bands up there, give everybody kind of a chance to get together, kind of a collaboration of artists sort of thing, and just kind of from there turned into a big old camping festival.
Mm-hmm. In the area of folk music, what's trending right now? It's these old sounds that are coming back, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a bit of, you might call it a revival coming on. People are just, I guess, picking it up again. The banjo sound is coming back a lot. You have some popular bands that are picking up these instruments, you know, and applying them to pop forms and, I mean, a huge myriad of genres. You know, there's banjos in metal music nowadays, and trust me, it's out there.
Really? Okay. And it's got a following, too. There are plenty of young people who are listening to this music.
Very much so, yes.
Mm-hmm. So the Two Rivers Festival, what Two Rivers we're talking about here, when I look at a map, I have to assume it's the Cedar and the Iowa Rivers, because that's about where they come together at Conesville.
Exactly, that's right. Yep, the Cedar and the Iowa down there on both sides of us. It also kind of coincides, of course, I'm sure you're aware of the Two Rivers on both sides of Iowa. I think perhaps you have a program of some sort that might...
Yeah, we all love our river to river. Okay, we're made for each other, Blake. So
match made in heaven.
So this is on the Conesville grounds there, the event grounds there. So you're hoping people will camp out over the weekend?
Yep, we're offering camping. It's a huge 70-acre plot. And so we have RV camping. We have tons of tent camping space available. It's a real huge area. And so, yeah, we're hoping people come in Friday evening and stay with us until Sunday. We are going to have a big jam and a few acts up on Sunday as well, even though the main stage is really only slotted Friday through Saturday until about, you know, 3-4 a.m. on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the artists that will be heard at the Two Rivers Music Festival next weekend.
Well, we were extremely fortunate to get some great regional bands like Flatland Harmony Experiment out of Indianapolis, Kind Country out of Minneapolis. We got our good friend John Eric, who, of course, is a banjo player in Iowa City here. My good friend Sam Knutson is going to be playing for us, and he, if you're familiar with the Iowa Opera House Project, that was one of his little projects, of course. Great songwriter, very lucky to have him. Some Iowa artists from Burlington, we have Sean Costanza, Eric Pettit Lyon. We have the Creeping Charlies, who are kind of from a few different townships in eastern Iowa. Bringing down a few friends from Wisconsin, including my friend Jack Tell, and good friends in this band called Feed the Dog. A few other Iowa City bands, Deaf Kitty Blind Dog and Crystal City will be playing. And from Des Moines there, we've got a group called Whiskey Tree.
And also, your band is included as well. Tell us about...
Also, my band, Flash in a Pan.
Flash in a Pan. They've been featured on my other Iowa Public Radio show, Java Blend. Tell us a little, for those who don't know Flash in a Pan, we're going to hear a little bit of your music going out. But tell us, what's the idea behind Flash in a Pan?
Flash in a Pan started as a project where we really only intended to play two shows and call it. And that was about 4 years ago. And we've just kind of kept at it. And we just kind of travel around different spots around Iowa has kind of been the game to go around, hang out with people in these more off the beaten path. If you kind of think of Iowa as I-80 and 35, you know, a little farther off that beaten path, and to get into the grassroots kind of support of Iowa, because it's really a great supporting of the arts state. You really don't get this all over the place. And so it's just, for us, it's nice to get out and hang out with people who, you know, just appreciate the music, appreciate having some entertainment, and we just love to be entertaining. As far as our music goes, we really try to push this folk adaptation. I use the term genre bender every now and then, in that we'll take folk instruments and kind of apply it to whatever song we really feel like playing at the time. With our original works, it's a big mix across the board of grass and folk influences, and so it comes out almost, you hear a lot of people say ungenreable or is non-conforming, I would say that we try not to constrain ourselves and have as much fun as we can.
Indeed. Your music sounds like a lot of fun, and we're going to listen to it on the way out. Blake, tell us how people can find out more about the Two Rivers Music Festival taking place June 24th and 25th at the Conesville Event Grounds?
They can visit www.tworiversfest.com. There we have information about all the bands, the event grounds. There's a nice little map there to help you get down to Conesville. And you could also pick up pre-sale tickets on Eventbrite.
Okay, Blake Daly, let's listen to your band, which will be appearing at the festival among many other talented bands. A Flash in a Pan performed on Java Blend not too long ago on Iowa Public Radio. You have a song from that performance you'd like to go out with?
Sure. Let's take a look at Honey in the Cold Ground.
Honey in the Cold Ground by Flash in a Pan, Blake Daly, and the rest of the band you're listening to as we end this edition of River to River. Blake, thanks so much. Good luck with the Two Rivers Music Festival.
Hey, thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Stones that think and trees that talk.
For more information about the Two Rivers Festival or other music festivals in Iowa, just go to iowapublicradio.org. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, with help from Graham Bly. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great weekend.